Margo, you're totally right.
Where does Apple use Core Data, John?
I don't know. There's question marks after all those bullet points in the thing. Someone, a bunch of people emailed us and told us, and I couldn't find those emails. So I think this is a follow-up from last week when I think Marco was saying that he didn't know where Apple used Core Data, and this was in response to
Core Data Sync in particular, the iCloud Core Data Sync that was such a disaster.
Yes, not just plain old Core Data. This is in response to the idea that Apple, which APIs does Apple dog food? And by the way, we just had someone email us and say, what does dog fooding mean? I sent him the Wikipedia link, but it just means using your own stuff. Like if you're making an API in this specific case and you don't use that API yourself, chances are it won't be that great because you won't know the pain of using it. You'll just be like, we made this API for you, go use it, but we don't know what it's like because we don't have to use it. Anyway, the suggestions that I think people sent us for Apple applications that use Core Data iCloud syncing are the Trailers app on iOS and syncing for keyboard shortcuts between Mac and iOS. Was that the only ones we got sent?
That's the only ones I saw, yes.
Yeah, and what's funny, so the Trailers app, fine. That's how much data is that actually syncing between devices? And yeah, that's okay, fine. Keyboard shortcut sync. I've actually heard many people complaining that their shortcuts are not syncing properly. So if that is using Core Data iCloud syncing, that is really not a good recommendation for it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's just two obscure apps, too, that kind of, these exceptions that prove the rule, that this is not something that underlies, like, their major apps. Unlike, for example, CloudKit, which they're building major applications like Photos and everything on top of, where it's like, if that doesn't work, people are going to notice. Whereas if the Trailers app or even keyboard shortcut sync doesn't work, maybe some will be annoyed, but it's not like, it's destroying their family photos.
Yeah, when I was, when was it? It was when iOS 8 was in beta, I believe. And I don't even think that I had upgraded any of my devices to the beta at this point, but my keyboard shortcut sync was completely borked until I had everything on iOS 8 in Yosemite. And it was infuriating because I don't know if you noticed this about me, gentlemen, but I tend to use emoji occasionally and I have shortcuts for most of my frequently used emoji and I felt absolutely crippled without them. It was a dark, dark time.
I'm so sorry.
Me too. Anyway, all right. So we talked in episode 102 about an interview with Andy Matushak that was in Objective CIO, and Hendrik wrote in and said, "Man, we should really talk about it." So I guess we didn't really give it enough airtime. And I think one of you guys, I guess John, had written a few things that we should probably also bring up from that interview.
It's just one thing, and maybe we did talk about. I vaguely remember talking about the thing, but I don't remember this paragraph with the highlighted bit. He's talking about React, but then Andy used to work for Apple. So he talks about what it was like when he was at Apple, he was there. He says, one of the complaints I have about my time at Apple is that because the culture doesn't value learning, nobody reads. Nobody knows what's going on in the broader community. People didn't know about React at all. And this is a talk discussing React. And that reading that doesn't make me feel good because then it's like the bad ideas I have about any big company. The idea that Apple's filled with all these super smart people making amazing products, but that it's sort of insular, that they're not, like, they're interested in what they're doing, but not so much interested in what's going on elsewhere. I don't know. Like, this is just one person's complaint about, obviously one person doesn't work in the whole company. They work in a small part of the company. And there's obviously evidence that of places where this is not the case. I would hold up Swift as an example. It's clear that the design of Swift is heavily influenced by other languages, all of which are, being developed outside of Apple. So it's obviously not as completely, inward looking and insular as this complaint makes it sound. But the idea that that could exist at all inside Apple is kind of disappointing to me.
Yeah. And this is a fairly credible and relevant statement because, Andy Matushak was on UIKit in, I don't know exactly what capacity, but I think a pretty high one. So he was like right where the discussion of React would be most relevant in UIKit. Like that's exactly where this is important. He was there and he is, as far as I'm aware, pretty well respected. So, I wouldn't take this comment lightly. I mean, in fact, like when I first read this, I was really surprised that it didn't get more attention because to me, it's kind of a bombshell to say that because the culture doesn't value learning, nobody reads. nobody knows what's going on in the broader community. Those are big statements to make, especially from somebody like this, who, like, I don't think he goes around like throwing around phrases like that lightly.
But they're also made by somebody who left, right? And the person left probably because they weren't getting enough of, like, you know, there was new, interesting, novel things happening outside of Apple. And Apple, in some respects, has to be more conservative because, you know, they've got a big operation going on there. They can't just be chasing after the newest shiny thing in all sorts of directions. And as we've discussed on past shows, it seems like the technical resources at Apple are fairly overextended in terms of, like, it's very hard work. There are tight deadlines. They're expected to do amazing things and put in long hours. That doesn't leave that much time left to be sort of reading blogs about interesting new technology that may or may not influence. And really, like, it ends up, if it's a personal interest, you read about it. But, like, how relevant is it? Because it's like, what if you just come in one day? Oh, I have an idea, guys. Let's forget about this UI kit thing. Let's do something that incorporates some of the ideas that I've seen elsewhere by reading these programming blogs and looking at other frameworks. They don't go, great, that's great. Let's all replace UIKit. Let's go do that, right? That's not something that happens. So if you're just doing it on your own, like, the people who are super interested in that, I would imagine, leave Apple because you're not going to get to do that stuff at Apple. Very few people are going to get to make that kind of radical decision and have it take place. And again, Swift is the example of it actually taking place because a very important person had, an idea influenced by lots of other languages and managed to get it done. And even that was a fairly large effort over a long period of time. And that's a situation that's probably not going to repeat itself. Like, say Andy really loved React and the ideas inherent in it. What could he do with those ideas at Apple other than, you know, leave Apple and pursue something elsewhere where he can use the stuff that he learned?
One of the things that's really tough about consulting is that if I do some sort of self-directed learning outside of work, because goodness knows I'm not going to have the time at work unless I'm quote unquote on the bench and not billing a client and not earning money and generally a waste of space.
Wait, do they actually use that phrase, on the bench?
I do. I think it's a common phrase. That's certainly something I've always said, which is funny because I'm not much of an athlete and it comes from sports, but whatever. I don't know. Maybe that's bothersome to most. To me, that's not as bad as circle back and keep me in the loop and all the other god-awful corporatisms.
Parking lot,
exactly. But anyway, so if I do some self-directed learning, let's say, I don't know, maybe I learn a little bit about Node for whatever reason, the likelihood that I'm going to be able to bring that back to the office in a direct way is virtually non-existent. Now, there's a lot of ways in which I can bring it back to the office in an indirect way. For example, a more robust knowledge of JavaScript is going to serve me well when I'm writing JavaScript for a web browser. But the likelihood that I'm ever going to be asked to do a Node project for work is virtually non-existent. And that's a bummer, and that sucks. And it's not that we don't learn at work, but it's hard when what you're learning is so far removed from what you're doing day to day. And I could make, and I think John was making, a pretty solid argument that React, while yes, it's all a UI, but the mechanisms are so far removed from what Apple does in UIKit. How do you really apply that if you're a UIKit engineer?
And all it does is kind of sow discontent and agitation. Like, boy, if you're really turned on by these exciting developments that are happening elsewhere, and then you go back to work and realize, I can't, like, forget about it, direct application of the knowledge. Like, I get to write Node, but, like, I can't even incorporate these ideas into my work to the degree that I think I should be able to. Like, some ideas are small, and, like, yes, I can apply them to what I'm actually doing in this new UIKit framework, but some ideas are large, and it's like, this idea only makes sense at the scale of, like, how is the API designed? What is the model of UI interaction? And, like, the model of React is just so much different than the model of UIKit. It's such a big idea that, you know, it's like structure, not like details. That how do you apply that if you're not going to say, I'm going to make some whole new, you know, UI paradigm, and then that's not something you get to do.
Yeah. All right. Do we want to do a quick word from a friend, and then we can talk about some car-related stuff?
Our first sponsor this week is our friends once again at Cards Against Humanity. Now, last time they sponsored us, they sent John a toaster to review instead of doing a typical ad read. I actually have no ad copy for them. They didn't give me any. So, this week, they have sent John another toaster. John, what did you think of your current toaster?
All right. No context for this one. If you want to know why the hell I'm talking about toasters, listen to the last episode. This toaster is the Panasonic NBG110P. Great names to have these things. When I haven't listened to my old Hypercritical Toaster episode in a long time, so, but my recollection is that part, something that I talked about on the show was the idea that I had seen toasters that seemed to use different technology to heat the food. And I was like, boy, this is great. I bet these are going to heat up faster and heat more evenly. And pretty soon all toasters will be like this. But when I went to go buy toasters, I looked around, I didn't see any of these high tech toasters. Like, maybe I was just imagining it. That was this just a fad in the 80s or 90s. And I just forgot about it. But all the toasters were back to the same old, you know, designs that I'd seen in the past. Well, this Panasonic toaster is very close to those sort of futuristic, you know, advanced toasters that I was thinking of, that I thought all toasters would be like. It has a heating element on the bottom that looks sort of normal, but it's got a heating element, two heating elements on the top, one of which is near infrared and one of which is far infrared. One of them, someone in the chat room will tell me which is which, I'm assuming it's the near, gives off lots of visible light. So it's almost like the toaster has a big light inside it, but that's actually part of the heating element. Anyway, bottom line is this thing makes toast really fast. It was like a minute and 30 seconds faster than my big expensive toaster.
Wow.
And that's like double the speed, right? And it was fairly even. There's only one element on the bottom and two elements on the top. So if you put four slices of toast in there, it's not quite as good as having two elements heating them. But wow, is it definitely fast.
Is that faster than a slot toaster at making toast? Because that's one of the advantages that the slot toaster people usually cite, is that slot toasters apparently make toast faster.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't have one to time it against. I just timed it against my other toaster. But in other respects, this toaster is weird. Like, as you expect from a toaster made by Panasonic, which is not sort of a kitchen appliance brand, at least not in this country. Like, it's very vertical and upright. The controls are below the door instead of to the side, so it's like saving horizontal counter space. The cord comes out of the front right corner of the toaster. I don't understand this design. Maybe it's meant to be tucked into something, but I don't think you're supposed to put, you know, have walls close to it. It's very confusing. And it's got a power button on it. Have you ever seen a toaster with a power button? Not like a power button to turn on to toast food, but a power button as in, now the toaster is on, now you can use the controls that are on the toaster. Like, it you know, it's on and off. And so you either need to remember to turn it off, or maybe you don't remember to turn it on. I don't know. It's like, does it have parasitic power loss if you don't turn the power off? It's very strange. And the controls in the front, this is big on having presets, where it's like, instead of, it does have controls for temperature and controls for time, all of which are digital, and the temperature settings are like five or six little different settings that you can set and you don't have to do each time. But it also has buttons for various types of food. And if I had to guess what these, you know, what kind of buttons you would have on a toaster, there are six of them, I would not have guessed. The first one is toast. Fine, I guess that one. Second one is waffle, frozen waffle.
Yeah, Eggos.
The third button is a roll, and it also says reheat, so I guess you're reheating rolls. The fourth one is frozen pizza. Fifth one is quick reheat, and it shows a chicken leg. And the last one is hash brown, and it shows frozen. So we've got bread, waffle, roll, pizza, chicken, hash brown. Like, I don't, these buttons confuse me. I feel like if they were just gone and you just had to use the normal controls, it would be better. But anyway, this is a very interesting toaster. I think this was the Sweet Home pick for the best toaster. It toasts bread really fast. It's kind of small. You can't fit four full-size pieces of bread into it. The tray does slide out when you open the door. It has a lot of things to recommend it. It's not bad, but it's pretty darn weird.
It seems like it might be. Do you think it would be a fair pick if you had, like you do, concerns about counter space usage?
It's very high, though. And like the thing is, I'll give up. Like, it's just about like half an inch or an inch too narrow to put two slices of bread side by side in it. And it's frustrating. You know, like if you try to put, it says a four slice toaster, but you got to have some pretty darn small bread. You cannot get four full size. Like, and it's frustrating when you get something that's like just a little bit, like, cause you can fit them in there if you kind of wedge it and smush them together. And that just doesn't feel comfortable. So I wouldn't sacrifice. I would give up that extra inch of counter space easily just to be able to fit four slices of toast in it, but can't argue with speed. Super fast.
The bread slice count that a toaster advertises it can toast at once is kind of like the number of people that tents advertise they can sleep.
Sleeps four hobbits.
Like, you basically always have to like add two.
Yeah.
John, how do you think this toaster ranks among the other now two that you have?
It's tough because it has a lot of things to recommend it over the previous toaster, but the previous toaster is just so much more normal. Like, it's slower, but I think the previous one did a better job at four slices of bread. It actually fit four slices. It seemed to heat them more evenly. The controls were definitely more conventional. I would probably pick this weird, crazy, fancy toaster over the previous one just because at least it has some headline advantages. The other one is like just does everything okay. I think I would... I don't know. It's a tough choice. I think I would probably just keep wedging the bread in there and just be happy that it toasts really fast, as opposed to the other one, which is just kind of like, you know, the dials and all that business. This one doesn't have the dial problem. You set you only have like six settings to set it, but once you find out which of those six settings works best for your bread, you don't have to change it. You just hit the power button, hit toast. I think I'd go with the fancy one, although I would have complaints about it all the time.
You?
Yeah, unlike my fancy toaster, which the only complaint I have about it is the stupid spring in the door, which apparently is only on my particular unit.
Nice.
All right. Well, thanks a lot to Cards Against Humanity for sponsoring our show. Once again, check them out, Cards Against Humanity. All right. That was... I love this. I love this series.
Is the best. This is so good. I hope it never stops.
Can all of our sponsors do stuff like this?
I hope so. All right. So, So a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, that's a Star Wars reference, John. I can't take myself seriously. We started a car themed podcast called Neutral. And at first everyone was like, yay, Marco and John are back. And there's that other guy. Who the hell is Casey? And then after a few episodes, they were like, yay, why are they still talking? But all of a sudden, like a phoenix, except not really at all, the Neutral's kind of coming back from the dead, because here it is on our Apple themed technology show. There is humongous talk these days that Apple might make a car. I don't know about you two, but I'm feeling pretty darn smug right now. How about you guys?
Oh, I'm scared that they're actually going to do it. I really don't think they should. I mean, not knowing anything about whether any of these rumors are credible. I mean, there's so many reasons why this might be a terrible idea.
Well, let's look at the sourcing here. Let's see where, you know, I have put a bunch of links in there. Who is saying that Apple is doing anything having to do with cars?
Well, 9to5Mac.
Right, so a 9to5Mac says something. They talk about who they hired. Hired the head of Mercedes-Benz R&D. I think he did like the interactive, like the, you know, the screen type stuff inside Mercedes-Benz and their R&D thing. It's like, all right, whatever. Like, I mean, we know they have CarPlay. That's not like a secret. And you hired a guy who does the CarPlay-ish stuff for Mercedes-Benz. Fine. And it's on 9to5Mac. It's probably credible. This probably happened, but it doesn't make us freak out too much.
But then the Wall Street Journal weighs in on the whole issue.
Yeah, then the Wall Street Journal posts this big thing that is pretty unequivocal. Like, the Wall Street Journal is not a rumor site, and their track record for Apple is pretty good. They tend to get a lot of these sort of what we assume are controlled leaks and stuff. But this was like, what was the title? Apple gears up to challenge Tesla in electric cars. And it's a big, long article, and it's talking all about that, you know, that they're secretly working, hundreds of employees are secretly working, creating an Apple-branded electric car, and that, you know, lots of important people are on the project, and it was started a year ago, and they've got engineers from Ford working on it, and the person who's making it was given permission to create a 1,000-person team and to poach employees for different parts of the company, all the same things that Apple kind of, you know, like when the iPhone was made, with Forstall going around and snagging all the good engineers from the other parts of the company saying, do you want to come work on our secret project or whatever?
An Apple spokesman declined to comment.
Yeah, so, you know, we're not saying this is 100% slam dunk, but suddenly you start to notice. Like, I had not been taking any of this Apple make a car stuff seriously at all, because there are just so many reasons, like Marco said, for Apple to hire all these car-related people. Like, they have CarPlay. Like, that explains almost any car hire.
I don't know about that. I mean, CarPlay is really a very small move in the grand scheme of things. Like, it's not a big initiative as far as we can tell so far from what we see on the outside. And I should clarify. So my app is CarPlay compatible, but none of what I'm saying is informed by any inside knowledge of that. I don't have any inside knowledge of that. So, you know, CarPlay is a very small project that, as far as I can tell, is having a very slow start. It's used by very few cars. It's used by very few people. It's used by very few apps. And among the cars and people and apps that are used with CarPlay, it usually gets mixed reviews. And I don't know, and I don't know if it's the fault of the head units or the controls or the software. I have no idea, but it seems like a pretty tiny hobby project. So I don't think they would be hiring allegedly hundreds of people making a giant secret research lab just to make like the next version of CarPlay. That I don't think that's plausible.
That's the information we can't confirm. We can confirm things more or less of like who was hired to work at Apple, and those are the confirmed facts of this case that you know that you can actually check on and like, you know, they hired the guy from Mercedes-Benz R&D. They hired some guy from Ford. You can figure that out as well, right? But you can't confirm hundreds of people being moved from Division A to Division B. You know what I mean? Like that's all just kind of rumors and stuff. So what I'm saying is like all of the news about a particular executive or a particular hire of an important. If we hear about Apple hiring somebody, they're probably an important person, and those are in the ones and twos. And CarPlay totally explains any of those hires, right? What it can't explain, like you said, is if they really have hundreds or thousands of people off in some offsite location working on a big project. That doesn't seem like CarPlay in its current form, but it could be many other things like helping to make to design the entire interior and interface of a car that they don't happen to make. That would be a significant undertaking that would require lots of people partnering with a specific car maker. And by the way, mixed in with all this are the stories from earlier, months ago, of like Tesla's hiring away all the Apple employees and going in both directions. You know, Tesla's hiring away Apple employees, which I kind of makes sense to me when I read those stories. It's like, well, yeah, like who wouldn't want to go work for Tesla? And it's kind of a shame because what immediately popped into my mind is, Elon Musk walking through a garden with some Apple engineer and saying, do you want to sell sugar phones for the rest of your life? Or you want to come with me and change the world?
Casey, that's a reference, by the way.
Yeah, because like who's the shoe is on the other foot now? It's like, well, what's more exciting, like revolutionizing the world of cars with electric cars or doing what Apple's doing? And maybe it's closer. Maybe it's a toss up. It's certainly not Apple versus Pepsi. But I can imagine it not being very difficult for Tesla to hire away Apple employees who are car nuts, because you don't get to work on cars at Apple, right? Or do you? Yeah, and then the other rumor is that Apple tried to buy Tesla. You know, lots of people, again, fairly unsubstantiated. Some people predicting that Apple will buy Tesla. Some people predicting they already did try them. But every time you read something like that, it's like, yeah, it's easy to write that story. But there are so many things that we have had retroactively confirmed about Apple trying to buy companies that, you know, refused them or considered buying companies and didn't, like, or like trying to drive buy Dropbox, not really buying Dropbox, and their dalliance with Palm way back in the day, if people can remember that. Like, these are not, the best thing about all of these stories is they are not entirely unplausible. These rumors, I don't think any of us 100% believe any of these because the evidence is not better supported, but all of us get to the point where we're willing to entertain the thought, right?
One of the reasons why I never thought Apple would make a TV set, which I've talked about a few times here before, is that the TV set business is just kind of a messy business. It's a very, very big, like, you know, commodity business, supply chain business, but not in a way that leads to a lot of profit usually, unlike the phone business and their computer business. And it's also not an item that is frequently updated and upgraded. Typically people buy TVs like every decade or whatever. It's not like a every couple of years kind of thing like a phone or a computer. And there's not a lot of ways an Apple TV, as from whatever we know today, TV world to be, there's not really a lot of ways an Apple TV could really meaningfully differentiate itself from what the current little Apple TV puck box for $100 does, or what another one could do. So it seems like getting into the TV set business is not only unnecessary because they can get all the value they need out of just making a box, but also probably not wise, because it's kind of a messy business. Well, talk about a messy business. How about the car business? I mean, the car business is, you know, not only extraordinarily expensive to get started and to run, and of course, you know, Apple has the cash. If they wanted to build a car factory and design cars, they could. Whether they should and whether they would is a very different story, but certainly they have the money. You know, they could afford to set this up, even though it is extremely expensive. The big problem I see with it, though, is that, you know, like the television business, the car business is just really kind of messy. Apple doesn't really get into a lot of those like messy businesses that often. Like,
cell phones are pretty messy.
Well, they were never a cell phone carrier, for instance.
I know. But they tried to be, though. That was their first instinct, to say carriers suck. Can we do a phone without involving carriers? And they pursued that. Right. And they just determined, no, you can't be. We need the carriers. Right. It's the type of, I know it's not a business that they like to be in, but there are businesses that have been messy until Apple entered them and sort of clarified the thing. And when I look at this whole situation here, I think to myself, who is the Apple of the car business? Either one of you two?
I would argue BMW, but I am hugely biased.
BMW, are you crazy?
I mean, I would say there isn't one. I mean, there is. I mean, as car analogies are often used and frequently misused in tech discussions and debates, I think in this massive car analogy, there is no equivalent. There is no fair point. I mean,
I think there's 100% there is an Apple of the car business, and it's Tesla. The reason it's Tesla is not so much for anything like, oh, because they have a big tablet on the dashboard. They're the Apple of the car business. No, they're the Apple of the car business because, time for Johnny Ive to come out, they reimagined what the car could be. And they took out all the crap in the car. Like, they're even getting rid of hydraulic brakes. It's like, there's nothing. Go see a Tesla Model S. There's no car there. There is no car inside that car. Like, you look around in it and you're like, there's a big cavernous thing, a trunk in the back, and it has seats that go in it. And what's in the front? There's a big cavernous thing where you put, it's like, where the hell is the car? And in the interior, there's no, yes, like, and this, the massive simplification of the car. Like, they're talking about how many parts a car has. A lot of these things are like, you know, there's 10,000 components required to make a car or whatever. Like, the number of parts in a Tesla compared to the number of parts on an internal combustion engine alone, let alone the entire car surrounding it, is just night and day. And so that's the type of simplification. Not that Tesla invented the electric car. Like, obviously, you know, this is another reason why I think they like Apple. But that type of simplification of, like, we're not just going to make a car. We're going to make something that is simpler and better and, you know, has fewer parts and less things that can go wrong and different characteristics and thing. And people are going to tell us you can't because of, you know, range problems or, you know, like that it's not, it doesn't make nice noises like internal combustion engine, all these other things, but we're going to do it anyway. And the other part that's like Apple is, you know, Apple didn't invent the MP3 player or the mobile phone or anything else. Tesla did not invent the electric car. Many people have made electric cars before them, and most of them had not been that great. Like, from the GM EV1 way back in the day with its lead acid batteries, all the way up through all the different models that are, and the hybrids and the things that have gone in between. And Tesla is, it, you know, takes the Apple approach of sort of leading from the top, doing whatever it takes to make a good electric car, which turned out to cost like $100,000, right? But it's, you know, it's the first electric car that people actually say is a good car, and that's totally an Apple type of thing to do. And the whole way that it's made is such a difference from, you know, dealing with all the internal combustion and everything, right? So that makes me think that it's not impossible for a company to do an Apple-like thing to cars. Tesla shows, of course, how difficult it is because you have to deal with, you know, dealer organizations making it so you can't sell your car in your states and all the crazy government regulations. And it's not guaranteed that even with all the government subsidies that Tesla's going to come out on top and blah, 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 blah. But I 100% think Tesla is the Apple of cars. And that's kind of bad for Apple making a car, because if there's already an Apple of cars, what the hell is Apple going to do if they can't buy Tesla?
No. See, here's the thing. I know you're wrong that Tesla is the Apple of cars. And the reason you're wrong is because a software update actually made the Tesla faster.
Ooh.
Apple used to do that all the time back in the old days.
Just kidding.
OS X used to get faster with every release on the same hardware. Those were the days. Well, it did that by starting off and being super slow and crappy. Tesla didn't start off with it. They just shaved a couple seconds here and there.
I'm just being silly.
Oh, and we forgot the other rumor involved with the car thing that we talked about at a previous show. Is like, you know, minivan spotted with weird stuff on the roof and the reportedly Apple self-driving cars. And we talked about that. And so that is very easily explained by Apple doing something like Street View, which we think they need. Is Apple interested in self-driving cars? That's totally an Apple-style simplification. Like, you don't even need to drive the car. But I think Apple is not as interested in Google as Google is in that kind of basic research at this point.
Yeah, and for whatever it's worth, the Wall Street Journal article said specifically that a person familiar with the project said that self-driving cars are not part of Apple's current plan. And that's also, I mean, that's for the best. I mean, how well do you think Apple does with really complicated academic AI kind of problems. Like, that's not really their strong point.
And honestly, I think at this point, the Apple's ability to make a card, no matter how many people they hire now, how many hundred engineers they put on it, like, look how long it took Tesla to make its first car with the help of essentially buying Lotuses and strapping its batteries and engines in them. Like Apple has a leg up on them, and that they have a hojillion dollars, and that helps you along significantly. But it takes a long time to build expertise. And even if you can buy expertise, it takes a long time to buy expertise and get it all working together. Like, again, I think they could do it, but it would be a long road. And if Apple decided that it wants to make a car because it believes cars can be simplified and can be made better or whatever, the obvious move is to buy Tesla, because they've already done so much of that work. And their philosophy of simplification and reimagining the car as something both better and less complex than it was before is totally in line with the type of stuff that Apple does. It's just that Apple doesn't really know anything about cars at this point.
So has there been a time in the past when Apple has taken a product that was basically fully formed and bought the company and made it their own? I think, like, what was it? SoundJam became iTunes. Is that right?
That worked out well.
That's sort of kind of what I'm talking about.
But if they bought Tesla, don't you imagine they would keep the Tesla brand? Like, they wouldn't make it the Apple car?
Actually, I guess to that end, Beats is probably the obvious answer to my question.
Right. I mean, they didn't even want to change the brand of the headphone maker. I would imagine they would keep the Tesla brand.
Yeah, I don't know. There's so many things about this that just make me really skeptical that these reports are getting the right big picture. Like, you know, you can pick up bits and pieces of information here and there, and you can say, oh, well, they hired this person who has a car background, and it seems like they're making a big lab, and, you know, all this stuff. You can put together the bits and pieces, but I really don't know if the conclusion is, well, of course they're building a car, because there, I mean, as I said, like, there's so many reasons why that is not an Apple-like business to enter. And, you know, not to say Apple can't change and enter new businesses. That's how progress is made. But this just doesn't seem like the right business to enter. I mean, you know, you mess this up, people die. Like, it's very serious. It's very cumbersome of a business to enter, to be in at all. It is extremely hyper-competitive.
Well, I would not call it hyper-competitive. I would call it, there are large barriers to entry, which is kind of the opposite of hyper-competitive. Like, the fact that GM is still in business shows that it's not that. How competitive can it really be where when you go out of business, the government puts you back into business and your cars aren't really that great and your cars do tend to kill people sometimes, but, like, it'll all work out in the end. Like, yeah, there are high barriers to entry. But, like, the argument that I see in a lot of places is, like, even from the GM executive, you know, the car business, like you kind of did with the TV business, the car business is not like a high profit business. It's low margin. It's difficult. And, like, I always see people saying that whether it's about TVs or about cars, like, well, then why the hell are you even in this business? You just describe your own business as pretty darn crappy, right? But you could describe the PC market the same way. Oh, it's low margin. It's a race to the bottom. It's crappy. Somehow Apple manages to make money there. And the phone market in similar ways. Apple's big thing, kind of like Tesla at this point, is we find the most profitable part of the market, which is usually near the top, and we make a lot of money in that part. And maybe we expand down as we're able to, but I don't think it's impossible for Apple to make margins on its theoretical car that would make GM cry, because Apple is better at, you know, because first of all, Apple's car is going to be way simpler than an internal combustion engine car. Apple already has some of the expertise and contacts to do the battery stuff. And, you know, like,
they already buy a lot of lithium batteries.
Yeah. Like, there is definite synergies there, but, like, I don't entirely buy the story either, but, like, almost every argument I've seen against it, and even the TV for that matter, like, Apple knows where to get LCDs from. Apple can stick something inside it. Like, is it a low margin business? Apple's TV wouldn't be low margin. You know what I mean? Like, if Apple makes a TV, it will not be like, oh, we make $2 on every TV. If Apple makes a car, it will not be a low margin car. I don't know what the margins on the Model S are, especially with all the government subsidies being factored in, but if Apple was making the Model S, they could make it for less money, just because, you know, you got to have money to make money. You got to have the deals. You got to have the contracts. You get that Apple could make the Tesla for less money than Tesla is making it. So immediately the car has higher margins than it has there. So all those arguments against aren't as compelling to me as the idea of, like, that Apple doesn't want to make cars, because, like, why doesn't Apple make boats? Why don't they make airplanes? Why don't they sell real estate? Like, they're a company that uses technology to make people's lives better, but at a certain point when you go into, like, cars or constructing buildings or opening medical clinics around the country. These are all things that Apple could do, but it starts to drift off of the path of what I picture as a business that Apple want to get into. Just because it involves technology, everything involves technology at this point. So from this one Wall Street Journal story made me take it seriously, but it has not convinced me that it's happening.
Right, because I think, you know, what a few people have said is that, you know, they worry about Apple's focus. You know, if this is true and if they do end up making a car, like, you know, should we be worried about the focus? And I think one way to look at this is, you know, you've heard, I'm pretty sure Steve used to say this, I know Tim always says this, which is that Apple tends to only, or ideally, the ideal Apple, maybe not the actual Apple, but the ideal Apple is a company that only enters markets where they think they can make a really meaningful difference.
But that doesn't help you here, does it? Because don't you think they would say, we can totally make a meaningful difference by changing the way everybody drives? Like, this is totally a meaningful difference.
Well, but from the product side, like, we already have electric cars.
I know, but they've never really been done right. And Tesla is being Tesla is being choked to death by, you know, the rest of the automotive industry. Like, I kind of think of Tesla that way. It's like a little, like a fledgling little bird. Like, we all want it to fly, but it's constantly getting beaten down. And it's amazing that it has done as well as it can, you know, with government help and everything. But, like, wouldn't we all feel terrible if Tesla just didn't make it?
Yeah, that would be unfortunate.
Like, because it was like, we know that they've made a good car. Like, the Model S is a good car. I don't care. I mean, yes, it's $100,000. It better be a good car. But it is a good car. It's like the first good electric car. Like, the Roadster didn't even apply that. And it has limitations and so on and so forth. It's like, wow, someone finally did it. You know, it's nice to drive. It's attractive. It's got all the advantages you expect from an electric car. It's really fun. Like, they did it, right? And now you just keep, you know, well, they can make a cheaper one, they can make a $30,000 model, they make an SUV. Like, you want them to just spool up and eventually become a real car company. And if they failed, if they kind of like, oh, we didn't quite make it, we're filing for bankruptcy or whatever, everyone would be disappointed. So I think that shows that we want someone to come in and make a significant difference in the industry. Whether that has to involve Apple at all, I don't know. Well, I mean, and if we don't want to, like, if Marco keeps groaning, because he doesn't like the idea of Apple making a car, but like, you don't think they're going to be pulling people off UIKit to work on the car. You know what I mean? Well, maybe kind of for the interface, but...
Of course they will.
But not to the degree that, like, people got pulled off OS X to work on UIKit. Like, there are no automotive engineers at Apple who are going to get pulled off their current project to work on the car. Like, automotive engineers are, you know, that's a different skill set. Mechanical engineering, you know, maybe the manufacturing people, there'll be some crossover, but I feel like it wouldn't be as big of a focused diversion as many other things that Apple does do. So I'm not groaning quite as much about losing focus on, you know, because I assume they would just hire new people. Or, like I said, they would just buy Tesla. They come with a bunch of people who already know how to make cars.
What I was really getting at with the make a meaningful difference thing, think about it from the buyer's perspective. Like, if you are buying an Apple car, or let's say right now, let's say you're buying a Tesla, because that's the closest thing we have to what we think this might, you know, the kind of thing we think this would be. You'd probably if you look at what's in the market today, it would probably be closest to a Tesla than any other vehicle. Maybe a Leaf, but, you know, probably closer to a Tesla. So if you think about that as a driver, I mean, none of us drive electric cars. So we don't really, maybe this is not the right, you know, maybe we're not the right people to be speculating on this part, but is there that much of a difference when you're driving the car, when you're owning the car, whether it's electric or gas, so much so that an Apple car could be, like, radically different to own and operate and drive than any other car? Like, I don't think the differences are that big.
I think they are. Like, I don't, other than the battery, which is still a concern, but Tesla has a built-in way to replace and everything like that, the maintenance concerns and costs and the number of things that can go wrong, like, there's just less stuff in the damn car. It's electric motors, and, like, once the brakes are electric too, yeah, you got to replace brake pads, but, like, there's no fluids, there's no, like, you know, look at the hydraulic system, it's just, there's no oil, there's no gasket system. It's just, like, so much stuff that you have to deal with car maintenance goes away. And so I just think that's a different experience of driving a car.
Well, but what can Apple bring to that Tesla and Nissan and everybody else can't?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think they should just buy Tesla. Like, but
that's the problem.
But, you know, so what can Apple bring to it that these other companies can't? Well, what they can bring to it is assured future for Tesla if they buy it, right? Because if you were worried about Tesla, if they're not going to make it, if they can't make, you know, $100,000 cars are fine, but if they can't field a $30,000 model, they're never going to be a player in the industry because you just have to come down in price a little bit to, if you're going to sell, you know, any significant number of cars. And if Tesla can't get that done on its own, Apple can make sure that that happens.
Yeah, that's a pretty weak argument, though. I don't know.
And obviously, they would make the UI and the interface inside it much better than it is now. Hopefully, I mean, there are areas for simplification in the interior of a car that you would hope. I mean, maybe today, not today's Apple. We've all lost faith in their ability to make decent interfaces. But the Apple of old, you would imagine, could simplify the interior of the car in the same way that the iPad simplified the music player and the iPhone simplified the phone interface. I mean, again, maybe you could say Tesla already did that by putting a big iPad in the dashboard, but I don't know. Like, I don't think Apple would be bringing as much to this as they brought to, obviously, as they brought to phones or anything like that. But, like, is that the question they're asking themselves? Like, if, you know, Tesla looks like they've already done a lot of the work, so we shouldn't even bother? Maybe?
I don't know. I keep coming back to what's in it for Apple. And I think we've been dancing around that question, you know, this entire discussion. And what is it that doing a car would serve for Apple? Now, maybe it would keep your engineers entertained. We've talked on and off about how...
That's the worst reason.
Well, I'm not saying it's a good reason, but it's...
No, your engineers would kill themselves. It would keep your designers entertained.
Maybe. Whatever the case may be. I mean, we've talked about talent retention here and there over the years, and, you know, that would theoretically retain talent, but of course, I'm also assuming that every nerd is also a car nut, and that could not be further from the truth. The only other thing I can think of is, what if there's some sort of technology that Apple has invented or figured out how to leverage in such a way that it lends itself to a vehicle rather than to a piece of electronics? What I'm thinking of is, you know, the click wheel made the iPod, in many ways made the iPod the iPod.
Phil Schiller came up with that, though.
Click steering.
Yeah, exactly.
It's different that, like, all right, so give me, what's an example of technology, hypothetical, that you can imagine this being the case for?
So to finish my thought just very quickly, you know, multi-touch, yeah, it wasn't new, but it was leveraged differently. And there are a couple other examples that I can't think of off the top of my head. But what if they had some crazy new battery technology? And the reason it's not in iOS devices right now or MacBooks right now is because it's just too freaking big. You know, maybe these batteries are hugely, hugely, hugely efficient. They can charge in 12 seconds, but unfortunately, they're just freaking massive. And so the only thing that this is really good for is a electric vehicle. Granted, this is all hugely hypothetical, but in that case, maybe they would have something to contribute. And that seems to me to be the kind of thing that would make Apple say, well, you know, maybe we should give this a shot. Some sort of either different and interesting application of an existing technology, or even better, some sort of brand new technology that, for whatever reason, they just can't shoehorn into a iPad or an iPhone or a MacBook Air or MacBook Pro or whatever.
You're thinking of Mr. Fusion, aren't you?
That or a flux capacitor, yeah.
Yeah, the chat room had that one. Yeah, but that is perhaps the least Apple-like thing that I could possibly think of. Like, Google tries to do basic research, and even they don't do this type of thing. There is no secret battery breakthrough technology that Apple has that only works with big batteries. Like, if anyone's going to come up with that, it's going to be a university, theoretical physicist, or like, it's first, what's going to happen is the basic research is going to say that something is potentially possible. And then a bunch of people are going to try to do it. And the first person to pull it off is probably not going to be, like, Apple just doesn't do that kind of basic research. That's just not, I mean, and I don't think that's going to change about the company. This is not the way they work. Like, what does it say? Google outspends them in basic R&D, but, like, I don't know, some big multiple. And Google is not compared to, like, you know, the real basic research going on in, you know, the fields of science and engineering. Google's self-driving cars are, you know, not a drop in the bucket compared to people who are spending like just years and years working on whatever carbon nanotube battery technology type stuff. That stuff's going to come. And when it's, you know, Apple always grabs the stuff that's just at the edge of what's possible, and they apply their engineering and manufacturing expertise to bring it to existence. But I don't think that Apple has anything like that for batteries. Like, for something else, maybe they have a really good idea about the interface of a car, but there are a lot of limitations on the interface of a car because people are kind of used to what it is, and there's government regulations saying how it has to be.
I also don't think I want Apple making the interface to my car, because there's, I mean, for many of the same reasons, you know, we discussed early on in Neutral, which nobody listened to, we discussed our feelings on touchscreens versus knobs and buttons versus a combination of the two. And I think where we all came down is we actually don't like the Tesla approach of everything's on the touchscreen. Like I like knobs and buttons for all the controls that are necessary in my car for basic operations, things like the ventilation controls and, you know, like anything that's on the center console that's not like the navigation screen, I want knobs and buttons for. And even the navigation screen, like, I don't want a touch screen because the ones I've seen and used have been terrible. I want like the wheel, the iDrive wheel that BMWs have is great. The Audi has a somewhat similar one. Toyota and Lexus have a really weird, terrible pointing stick system that's just awful. And I've seen many other hideous systems from other brands. But, you know, for the most part, I want knobs and buttons. Because what you need in a car for both safety, especially, number one, safety, and also for just reduced annoyance, you need that button to work every time. You need to respond within the same amount of time every time. You don't, because what you don't need to be doing in a car and what you shouldn't be doing in a car is having to check up on the state of what you think you just did to make sure it took, or to reissue a command that the car misinterpreted. And if you look at Apple's current software designs and systems and styles and just the standards that, by which they hold themselves in reality, what we get from them in practice, it's not that solid. You know, there are parts of it that are, like, the kernel's pretty good these days, but, you know, the UIs, you know, all the stuff sitting on top, the services and everything, these are not, like, this requires a very different degree of reliability than what consumer software for computers and tablets and phones really requires. Cars, like, the things in cars need to work every time, and if they miss just a little bit, if it's just a little bit buggy or a little bit slow or a little bit inconsistent, it's really annoying and potentially very unsafe. And so I don't think I would want Apple making that kind of software in my car, at least as we know them today. And maybe they can do that in the future, but I'd be very worried if they did it today.
Don't you think the Apple Watch is reassuring in this regard, though? Because what mostly you're talking about is, like, what they did with the phone is they made it all screen because they realized that the buttons were limiting, and really the number of interesting things you can do with the phone when it's just all screen just expand greatly. It becomes a general purpose computing device. Whereas on the watch, they made a slightly different decision. Yeah, it's all screen because they expect similar type of things, but the little digital crown thing and the button on the side acknowledge that in this application, it's not just about, oh, I can make this a general purpose computing device because it's so darn small. So other aspects like quick access and reliable use of, you know, like, why don't I just make people pinch on the screen? Well, it's a different context here. They're not afraid to make it, you know, the highlight feature of their watch user interface to be a knob, essentially. I would imagine if Apple had a take on a car, like what you're envisioning is like, boy, if Apple made a car, it would look like just a big giant iPad in the middle of the dash. And that's essentially what Tesla did. I would hope that if Apple did a car, they would recognize that this context is also different than the mobile phone context. And that what's appropriate on a mobile phone, making it just a giant screen, would also not be appropriate here. So it would have, not that it would have a digital crown, but that they would have knobs and buttons and stuff on it. And it would not be entirely screen. I expect a big screen to be featured heavily, but I would not be surprised if an Apple-designed car interior had more knobs and buttons than a Tesla one does.
All right, so let's put this in the parking lot. I couldn't even say it with a straight face. I tried so hard to get it out with a straight face. Let's put this aside for a second, and let's talk about something else that's awesome.
Our second sponsor this week is Fracture. Fracture prints your photos in vivid color directly on glass. Go to fractureme.com and use the coupon code ATP15 to get 15% off your first order. And, of course, let them know that you came from here. So Fracture prints are awesome. Again, as I said, it's photos on glass. And what I love about them, I have a bunch of these around my house. What I love about them is that they are their own frame. Like, you don't need to go buy a frame or a mount or try to keep it flat like with prints or anything like that. It's great. It is just its own frame. And the pricing, considering that, is really amazing. Like, if you try to get something framed, or if you just go get big prints and buy frames, dealing with frames is very expensive, very cumbersome. Fracture prints are just awesome. They look standalone, they look modern, and they're clean. And I can't say enough good things about Fracture prints, you know, not only from a visual point of view, but from a practical point of view. And of course, it's a great value as well. As I said, I have a bunch of them around my office. People always ask about them. I get compliments on them all the time whenever people come over. They really are great. So anyway, they put everything you need to get your photo on the wall or on a desk. They get put all that stuff right in the box. So you have a little screw to mount it, or if you order the desk kit, you have a little fold-out leg to put it on your desk. It is great. Prices start at just $15 for a 5x5 square print. They also have rectangles and other shapes that have four sides. Every fracture is handmade and checked for quality by their small team in Gainesville, Florida. Fracture prints are thin and light. You don't have to worry about some giant heavy slab of glass falling off your wall. They're very lightweight, very thin, and then it's mounted on a piece of foam board on the back, so you can hang the picture hanging nail in the foam board, so you're not hanging it on directly on the glass. Anyway, very practical, very convenient. It ships well. It's packed nicely. We've ordered probably 10 of them so far, maybe. None of them have ever broken in shipping. They pack it very well. You don't have to worry about that. They pack it nicely enough that you don't need to worry. And of course, if it does break, I'm sure they'll send you a new one. But anyway, go to fractureme.com, use coupon code ATP15 to get 15% off your first order. Once again, photos printed directly on glass. I cannot recommend these guys enough. Thank you very much to Fracture for sponsoring our show once again.
So let's assume for the sake of conversation that CarPlay doesn't exist.
It basically doesn't.
Hey-o. God, the two of us are harsh today.
It hasn't gone very far. Maybe it will in the future, but right now it really has not gone very far.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. So if we take it that CarPlay either doesn't exist or barely exists, wouldn't it make the most sense that all of these hires and all of this activity is probably about making what we call CarPlay today? I mean, that just seems the most obvious to me. The thought of actually constructing an automobile seems kind of crazy to me.
Yeah, partnering, if Apple's interested in cars, partnering with a car manufacturer just to do what we talked about back in neutrals, these car makers all want to do it themselves. They want to be like, oh, we have our internal design group that does all our, Ford interiors with a new My Ford Touch, whatever, they want to do it themselves. It's a point of pride, but they're terrible at it because they don't have much experience. Cars used to not be about software. And then seemingly overnight, cars came about software. First, the engines were about software, but that was it's not visible. It's not user interface. So all of a sudden our engines all have 20 computers in them. They seem to make that transition okay. But when it came to make, human computer interfaces inside the cars, they have not done well and they haven't been able to attract that expertise. So we're always looking if you could just bring someone in from the outside, let Apple do your interior, but no car maker wants to let some, computer company come in and design that. They want, it's like BMW or whatever. It's it's a point of pride. We make the interiors and they just keep trying and they refine them and they get better at them. But I imagine if you're Apple and all the people at Apple, including the big fancy executives who make the decisions, drive super expensive cars, and kind of like how all the executives had super expensive cell phones but still thought they were all crap, I bet a lot of those executives with similar tastes drive to work in their $100,000, $200,000 cars and say, boy, the interior and interface of this car is terrible. And this is the best car you can buy. It's not because it's a cheap car. I'm rich. I have a lot of money. I still have to use a crappy cell phone and deal with my crappy TV set and drive a car that I love everything about except for the user interface and the interior, right? And so the channeling that frustration would be can't we work with BMW, Mercedes, Porsche, Honda, hell, anybody? Will anybody let us work with them at the level we want to work with them and say, we own the interior user interface of your car? You do the engine, you do the car, you do the structure, you do the suspension, you do everything else, but we own how you turn the windshield wipers on, how you adjust the radio, how you call someone on a cell phone from your car. Let us do all that for you. And so far, no car, if Apple has made those overtures, no car manufacturer has taken them up on the deal. And again, I don't blame them because if I was a car maker, I'd be like, F you. What you're basically doing is cutting us out at the knees and saying, you're half a car maker now. We're the important, please, Apple, come in and become the most valuable differentiator of our car line, relegating us to a mere manufacturer of a drivetrain and body shop. Nobody wants to do that, right? But I can imagine Apple wanting to do that. And maybe that's plan A. And plan B is, well, can't we just buy Tesla? And plan C is, we'll just make our own damn car. And that's a hell of an extrapolation of the order of events. And I don't know what kind of gaps there are between plan A, B, and C. But plan A sounds plausible, that Apple would want to be more involved in the interior of a car. And CarPlay is the weakest, most piddling little attempt to get Apple anything inside a car.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was driving at. And I come back to maybe, you know, when we started this conversation, one of you, I think John, had asked, well, who is the Apple of cars? And maybe the better question is, who is the AT&T? Who is the most beleaguered? Who is the most desperate? Who is the most willing to let Apple just saunter in?
I think you mean singular.
Actually, you're right. I'm sorry. That's very true. I do mean singular. So who is the most desperate and most willing to let Apple, you know, just waltz in and kind of take over the show? And I don't know who that is today.
Alfa Romeo. No, wait. Let's try again. everyone's already owned by somebody else. Like
right,
any beleaguered brand, like, you know, Tata or Fiat already bought them. So who's left?
But you see my point, right? I mean, it's just, who is most willing to do that? I think Saab before they disappear, because Saab is dead now, right?
Yeah, GM bought them, right? And then
Spun them off, I thought, or just let them die, one or the other. But
yeah, Saab is gone.
Saturn, you know?
I mean, no, they're gone too.
What kind of shape is Nissan in?
I thought they were doing well. Mitsubishi was hurting last I heard.
Yeah, Mitsubishi, but they don't offer a good car for Apple to put its stuff inside. Like, I don't, you know, like, the car is a much more important part of the entire product than the cell network was for the iPhone, arguably, even when they picked like the bad cell network, right? And also the phone always had sort of like, if we do well, obviously we'll expand outward. Like, we won't be AT&T or singular only forever if we're successful. Whereas if you're successful with a car, what do you think? Every car company is going to be like, oh yeah, totally, Apple, come and do our, you know, like, it's not, I don't see a path forward for that. It's like, you just, either you do something like CarPlay where you try to get buy-in from, and this could, CarPlay could still work. Like, you're not owning the interior, but every interior has a place where you can put your crap and some limited integration. Of course, Android's trying to do the same thing. Like, I think the prospects for CarPlay are similar for the prospects of, you buy your TV from someone else and let us control some part of the interface. And in practice, that kind of sort of works. Like, that's the puck device category. Like, well, we don't make your TV. We don't control the interface. Those menus you bring up to adjust the picture controls, we don't control any of that. We don't control your remote. But you can attach this box to one of your inputs and use our own little remote. And then we sort of take over your TV for a small period of time. And it's not great, but it works. And other people try to do it. So that's CarPlay. That's the Android car thing or whatever. But that's not going to get us to, like, that's not going to resolve our dissatisfaction in the same way that doesn't something make us all love our TVs because we have seven pucks attached to them.
Well, and also it's not a great metaphor because, like, TVs were kind of just made to be taken over. Whereas, if you want to properly integrate into a car system and take over the UI, you need to be integrated into a lot more. It's a lot more complicated than just like, oh, well, there's a giant screen, take it over. Like, you know, most cars have multiple displays and gauges and different control surfaces all over the place and all sorts of different things you got to hook into if you really wanted to take it over. And, you know, over time, that's only going to get more complicated. Like, look at what our fancy cars have. We have the heads-up displays. We have cameras in the mirror to look at stuff on the road. You got sensors all around the car. You got the navigation screen. You got media controls. You got navigation itself. You have all these, like, the mobile office BS, all these different things, like, and the number of systems in cars that are going to be integrated into everyday models is going to keep going up over time as these things get cheaper. So the model of what CarPlay is doing now is always going to be very limited and is really, if anything, going to keep being relegated to a smaller and smaller proportion of the car's overall smarts and displays.
But like television, the car interior is under attack from usurpers from the outside, right? Like, Automatic is an example. Like, a previous sponsor of the podcast lets you shove a thing into a standard port on your car and give it a bunch of features that it should have had and already if car manufacturers knew what the hell they were doing, but they don't, so use this. When we all used to have GPSs stuck inside our cars, when it wasn't on our phones and when it wasn't built into the cars, that was an attack from the outside. Hey, if car makers knew what the hell they were doing, every car would have GPS built in, but they don't, so buy this Garmin thing and suction cup it to your dashboard, right? Everyone connecting iPods to their stereo systems long before car makers got a clue. Like, there is a constant assault from outside world of the faster moving technology sector to do things that sometimes it's just kind of like taking advantage of your car hardware. Sometimes it's an entirely separate system like the GPS, but sometimes like Automatic, it's like, you know, help you find your car in the parking lot. Why can't you do that already? Because car makers have no idea what they're doing. Buy this thing and we'll help you do it, right? And I don't know, that's not, it's not like they're going to win, like they're going to overwhelm it from the outside because they can't. And Marco, you're totally right. Like, attaching a bunch of these things is like, it's worse than attaching pucks to RTU, because like the experience should be entirely integrated. It should know how fast your car is going, where you're probably going to, how much pressure is in the tires, what the current g-force being pulled is, whether it's okay to interrupt you with a call because it knows how you're, like, total integration. Like, that's, you know, you ask what could Apple add to the car experience. If, you know, this is maybe the idealized Apple, they could add an interface that takes into account all those things in a way no car maker has, and do it all without relying on a bunch of other stuff that you stick inside the car.
Yeah, I think you guys are both right. The only thing that that makes me doubt you is, what if they were to enter into a car, or work with a car manufacturer that already has a bus? Like, I think Volkswagen, for example, and I'm not talking buses in what the Brits would call a coach. I'm saying a service bus. And so, as an example, I think that Volkswagen has some hilariously named and mildly inappropriate service bus that all of their different components talk to. And I think BMW does the same thing, actually, and presumably most modern car manufacturers do. So maybe this isn't really narrowing it down at all, but like my friend Brian, who had a Volkswagen R32, I remember that he had done something. I don't recall the specifics, but he had done something with the Volkswagen CAN bus, as I believe what it's called. Thank you, Matt Donders, in the chat, where he had like added a gauge or something like that. Whatever he did something that was possible because basically all of the car's different computers were talking to each other on one common bus. And so if that were the case in, say, a Volkswagen or a BMW or something like that, then maybe they could do something more than just the fairly rudimentary CarPlay implementation they have now. Maybe they could add gauges, not to say that gauges are really the be-all end-all, but just as a simple example, you know, something like that is possible without presumably too much work if they can just get themselves onto the CAN bus.
Yeah, but as soon as anyone does that, as soon as Apple plugs into that, they're going to just lock it down. You know, because as John said, like, the car manufacturers kind of don't want someone else to come take over their systems and plug into their systems. Like, they want to control the whole thing for lots of good reasons, like for themselves, for their businesses, for safety. Like, there's so many reasons why they're not going to let anyone else just plug into their bus and drive all over it.
It's like, well, Microsoft did that with Ford, right? Weren't they the Ford My Touch interior thing, like Microsoft partnered with them?
Yeah, but that was like two desperate companies. I mean,
right. You know. Well, but the whole idea is like that it's almost as if it was to Ford's advantage for that interface to not be too good. Because like I said, if the reason people are buying your cars is because everybody knows it's the car with the awesome Apple interface and like you got to check it, like if that becomes the value proposition of your car, if it is the differentiator, you don't, like, people are buying your car not because of something you did. You are giving, there's some portion of value and attractiveness inherent in your product, and you're giving the most important portion of that to Apple. Like, it's kind of like the, you know, the cell network, you know, we want the iPhone in our network, and it turns out that people don't care what network it is. They'll get AT&T if it means they get to have the iPhone. The iPhone becomes the most important thing. It's not like, oh, this is going to make people love AT&T. No, it's going to make people love the iPhone. That is the differentiator, and that's where the value is, and they just want you to be a dumb pipe, and now you're sad.
Well, but that's exactly what Ford did with the My Ford Sync or whatever it was, which was Microsoft behind the scenes. And they made it clear that it was Microsoft. That was a selling point.
Right. But it wasn't that good. And no one was buying a Ford because of the, like, if all of a sudden people bought Fords because everyone knew that Fords are the cars with the great interfaces, that, like, they never had that reputation. That was never the value proposition of a Ford. And if it had become one, if it'd be like, I wasn't going to buy a Ford, but now everybody tells me, like, the same reason, like, I'm not into Apple, but everyone tells me an iPhone is an awesome cell phone, so I'm interested and I'm going to check it out, right?
I guess. But, I mean, to take it on its flip side, I feel like I've heard many times that, say, Cadillac's navigation interface is just atrociously bad. And we talked a long time, especially Marco, about how awful the Lexus interface is. So, yeah, maybe you don't want it to be a selling point, but you certainly don't want it to be a liability either.
Yeah, well, you're kind of right that it was, you know, Microsoft desperation. But Ford is actually one of the American car companies that is not constantly making terrible cars and being bailed out by the government. And, like, you know, if you had to pick what is the best American car maker, I think Ford is a pretty strong case to be made for Ford in terms of both financial health of the company and the quality of the vehicles they put out. There's spot exceptions. You can find exceptional cars and you know, all the other makers as well. But Ford overall was not the most desperate of all companies.
Our final sponsor this week is our best friends, Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com and enter offer code ATP at checkout. Now, you probably saw, if you are a regular person and not me, you probably saw the Super Bowl commercial during the Super Bowl with Jeff Bridges and that cool project. So you can go to Dreaming with Jeff to see that. We'll put the link there. So they did this cool project with Jeff Bridges, also known as The Dude, the actor who played The Dude. Cool stuff with this. He has some kind of, like, in my opinion, kind of strange album of sleep sounds. It's interesting. Go check it out. They built it all on Squarespace, and it's a fantastic demo for what Squarespace can do. Building a website with Squarespace is incredibly powerful and incredibly easy. They make ridiculous amounts of power available to you in an easy GUI, easy drag and drop interface. Everything is what you see is what you get. It is so advanced and so powerful. They recently redesigned it this past fall into Squarespace 7. It has tons of new features, great new design where everything, you're always on the page. Like, there is no separate management interface that you have to go to anymore. You are editing the page live right there, like, in the interface. Everything is WYSIWYG, as I said. They have all new stuff. They have integration with Google Apps. They have partnerships with Getty Images, so you can automatically put Getty Images into your stuff for just $10, and it's all fully integrated. Great deal, great integration, very easy to do. They have all new templates. They have a cool feature called Cover Pages, where if you want to put up a temporary or permanent splash page, like before people enter your site, if you want to promote something new, or if you just want like a different design for that, you can do that, turn it on or off, change it very, very quickly and easily whenever you want. As usual, Squarespace is beautiful, simple, and powerful. They have 24/7 support if you need it. All this is just $8 a month, and if you buy a whole year up front, you get a free domain name with that. Squarespace sites are they all have responsive design. Your sites will look great on any screen size, any device, and they will look like your site. It's themed to your site. If you change the theme, if you change colors and stuff like that, you can change all that stuff. That all matches no matter what size layout you're looking at. They also have commerce that if you want to sell stuff, physical or digital goods, they have a commerce platform integrated, no additional charge for that. Every website can have a store if you want to. You can start your free trial today for Squarespace. Go there, check it out. Just try to build something. They're very generous with their free trials. And just give it a shot. You don't have to enter a credit card to start. There is a real free trial here. You don't type in a credit card and then hope you remember to cancel it or anything like that. Real free trial, no credit card required. Go to squarespace.com, enter offer code ATP at checkout to get 10% off. Thanks a lot to Squarespace for supporting our show. Squarespace, start here, go anywhere.
All right. Anything else on cars?
Yeah, one more thing, I think.
We have more than one more thing. That's good.
Well, one more major thing to bring this back down to earth now that we're right,
followed busy, by 3 weeks of follow-up.
Too busy speculating about this. Let's all now assume that Apple is not going to make a car. But let's assume that these rumors about some large project at Apple involving cars in some way that is not Street View and that is not merely an extension of existing CarPlay exists. Because if this Wall Street Journal article, like, say it gets a bunch of things wrong and it guesses wrong about what these people are doing, but there really is a large number of people, Apple's gearing up and hiring, like Marco said, this seems crazy that these people would all be working on CarPlay. So if they're not making a car, and if this is not about Street View, and if this is not CarPlay, but it is car-related, what the hell is it?
I mean, honestly, I think a Street View-style project from those little minivans that we've already seen pictures of that I don't know if we definitely know that they're from Apple. I think that's kind of vague as to what the connection is, but assume they are. I think that would be enough to have a big staff and a big lab. Like, that might be the reason. That might be all this is because, you know, quote, all this is actually, to do a Street View kind of thing is a huge project.
But why would that be in a big building?
Well, it's a lot of data, a lot of software to write, a lot of data to manage and people to manage and a fleet of vehicles to manage. I mean, that's a big job. Like, there's a reason why only Google has that feature right now. Like, did anybody else ever do a Street View? Like, people have done the flyovers, which are not nearly as good. I don't think anyone else did Street View except them, right?
Not to my knowledge.
So the rumor is like a 1,000-person team. Like, if they were doing Street View, which I probably think they are, I would imagine this effort to be more distributed, like necessarily more distributed. It's not as if all the cars are leaving from California and coming back to California.
Well, it is Apple.
It's like all the AOL traffic going through Virginia.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't seem to I believe the Street View thing 100%. And I suppose that could take maybe 100 people, but not 1,000. And I'm not sure I would hire anyone from a car company to lead that, because that's more of a, I would hire someone from like a mapping company or someone who, you know, they already have acquisitions from the, you know, the Keyhole or whatever company that gave them their map data. And like, it just, it doesn't fit with this rumor that with, you know, I guess it depends on how much of the Wall Street Journal article you think they got correct. And I'm willing to believe that they got everything correct except for what these people are doing. I'm willing to believe that they, that this, the number of people is right, that their sort of general location is right, that the people who are leading them are correctly identified, but they just are guessing wrong about what these people are doing because they're not actually making a car. They're doing something. And I'm not sure what that something is.
I mean, the reality is, like, if you take these little collection of facts, assuming they're true, I think making a car is the most likely conclusion to draw from that. It's not what I want them to be doing. It's not what I think they should be doing, as from what I know today. I mean, this could also, you know, if you said to people in 2004, should Apple make a phone? You'd hear from a lot of people who would say yes, and a lot of people who would say, well, maybe they should just really focus on the computers. You know, so we don't know. I don't know, by saying I don't think they should really do this, maybe they will blow us away. I don't think that's very likely, just because, like, I don't know. I think they can make a car that is designed very well. But I think about, like, you know, if you look at, like, TVs and why, again, I know I said a lot of this earlier, but if you look at why they don't make a TV, I think one of the reasons they don't make a TV is that TVs really have very little interface. Like, the TV itself, like, the boxes that plug into it have an interface. The TV itself has very little interface, really. You're basically making tiny adjustments sometimes, adjusting the volume maybe, and then picking inputs. Like, that's basically what you're doing. Everything else now, you know, you're plugging a box and do things there. So, like, TVs, like, Apple could not bring a whole lot to that because most of what a TV does is a dumb screen that you turn on and off and pick inputs from.
But that, but they would own the whole screen. It's like, what can they bring to the phone? It's basically just a big screen. They own everything on the screen. It defines the experience.
Well, it's, well, but they already have that with the box. Anyway, so compare that to the car, to actual car usage. Like, this is kind of what I was getting at earlier when I was saying, like, how much can Apple bring to this? Like, as you're using your car, what parts of what you're doing in your car, when you're actually owning and driving a car, what parts of that process and the and that experience are you heavily interacting with something where interface quality is that important? I think one of the reasons why cars have such mediocre interfaces so often is because it doesn't really matter that much. Because for the most part, you're barely ever looking at the controls, I hope, and you're not doing that much. There's like 12 buttons. Like, you're not doing a massive amount of things. You're not running freeform software for plenty of good reasons that probably won't change. There's not that much going on there. And many of these advances, like, probably shouldn't happen for safety reasons. So, like, I really doubt what value Apple could realistically bring to this that would make it worth all this trouble, all this hassle, all the risk, all the expense, all the loss of focus. I don't know, like, what problem are we really desperate for an Apple car to solve? And because, look, all of us agree that cars often have, you know, pretty mediocre interfaces, but all of us still drive these cars with pretty mediocre interfaces. We all chose to buy the ones we bought for different reasons, really. Like, so not only do I not think Apple could make a huge difference here, but I'm also skeptical as to whether they would succeed much in the market, because, like, people buy cars for so many different reasons beyond the things Apple's good at.
Well, I mean, Apple's good at fashion too, and people buy cars for those reasons. But I think your view of what Apple can bring to this is too narrow. Like, it's not just about the user interface. Like I said, it's bringing the things that Tesla has essentially already brought to it, only bringing it to more people. The ownership and use experience of an electric car is, I think, significantly different from an internal combustion engine car, and it also different from a hybrid. And all the parts of the car that don't necessarily have to do with driving, getting in and out of it, the ownership experience, the maintenance experience, like, what the car looks like, how big it can be, where it can fit, like, all this, the places you can innovate with an electric car where you can innovate with internal combustion engines because you have different constraints. And Tesla is doing that now. And that is the, that's why I call them the Apple of cars. Like, that is what they're bringing to it. And yes, also hopefully making the interior have a nicer interface and having integration with your iPhone and having all this other, you know, like all the things you would expect them to do. But I think it's the sort of total ownership experience that, that Apple would be bringing to it. But like, I think we keep going back to what Apple is making with the car. And you said, if this rumor is true, the most likely thing, like if you think they're right about everything, is that they're making a car. I have to think that like 1,000 persons seems too small. And I would think that there would have to be something in this article about them hiring away automotive engineers from car makers, like poaching people from different parts of the organization. Like, if I just look at these facts, what it looks like they're doing, if I say every fact in this Wall Street Journal article is correct, is they're working on something having to do with interfaces inside cars. It does not look to me like they're making a car, because this, I mean, you know, again, if everything in this article is true, I would think you should be hiring way, 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 way more mechanical engineers, automotive engineers, and stuff like that, and be much less concerned about, like, poaching people from the rest of the organization to do like software and just hiring like what it just seems like, again, unless you're buying Tesla, which already comes with those people, this rumor, the most likely thing, if everything was true in this article, it's like, oh, they're doing something much more significant having to do with the interior of cars. That's what it looks like to me. I'm bored by that too, though.
Well, speaking of boring, what if it's something even more boring than anything we've discussed? Like, what if they're just using their knowledge of system on a chip and building an ECU, or what if they're building a custom ECU to work with their custom head unit to vertically integrate, or whatever the businessy term is, all the electronics and software in a car? But it could be any car. It could be GMs, could be Fords, no, or it could be Bentley. Who cares? I mean, it's a very boring answer, which is why I don't think it's really Apple style, but it's a possibility. I mean, they've gotten pretty good at chip design.
Yeah, but like, who's going to buy that? Like, I don't think they want to be a parts vendor for car makers. Like, that's a loser business. And like, anything where you think an Apple will vend this product or service or technology to all the car makers, that is kind of the same reason they can't seem to make a TV. It's like, and Apple will let this technology work with every cable company and all the TV. Like, the industry does not want that. The industry does not want Apple to come in and you know, sort of do what they did to the, remember they did to the music industry, and it's like, oh, well, Apple's not going to do that to my industry, right? And they basically did it to the cell phone industry too. Like, it was all about, they did it to the music industry, and it's like, damn, now Apple has way more power than we ever wanted them to. How do we get ourselves into this situation? And then it was like the video companies, you know, TV movies are like, we're not going to let Apple do what they did to the music companies, and they were super resistant and helped competitors or whatever. It's like, ha, we learned our lesson. The people who didn't learn that lesson were the cell phone companies. They weren't paying enough attention. They're like, yeah, let's see what Apple did to the record companies. Yeah, and now like the movie studios are all scared of them. Ha ha. Like, they weren't even thinking about themselves. And Apple came and did the same thing to them, essentially. It's like, oh, how did this happen? You know, and the car makers, I would hope, wouldn't let that type of, if only because of pride and stubbornness, which is, it seems to be very strong in the car business because there are so few car companies and because so many of them have like long storied traditions having to do with families and everything, that they do not want an outsider coming in. And like, first of all, if everybody's got it, it's not a differentiator, so screw that. And second of all, they don't want anybody coming in and telling them their business. But I don't know, like, it seems to me that Apple, if these rumors are true, wants to do something having to do with cars, and I think they seem to be starting in the interior and growing slowly. And so unless they buy Tesla, which they totally should because it would be great, I don't see them making a car.
Thanks a lot to our three sponsors this week, Cards Against Humanity, Fracture, and Squarespace, and we will see you next week.
Now the show is over. They didn't even mean to begin, because it was accidental. Oh, it was accidental. John didn't do any research. Marco and Casey wouldn't let him, because it was accidental. Oh, it was accidental. And you can find the show notes at atp.fm. And if you're into Twitter, you can follow them at CASEYLISS. So that's Casey Liss, MARCOARMENT, MARCO ARMENT, SIRAN. D.C., USA, Syracuse, it's accidental.
We didn't even mention that. Oh, it's shaped like a minivan.
Oh God, can you imagine? That has. I mean, it has to be maybe like maybe it's a compact hatchback of some sort. But even that's kind of.
They just mean it's shaped like where does this rumor come from? Well, in electric cars, you can have things like the Leaf that look sort of small, or even like the smart cars that have small internal combustion. Like you can end up with a car that is, what for lack of a better term, dorky looking. And it's all just about like, oh, it's a little commuter car, and it's just for transportation purposes, and like, that's less interesting to me as well. But then I can imagine someone who doesn't know anything about cars seeing that and saying, oh, it's like a minivan, or hell, seeing the Tesla Model X and seeing it's kind of like a minivan, like anything that doesn't look like a Ford Crown Victoria from their childhood looks like a minivan to them.
Well, wouldn't you default to SUV rather than minivan if you didn't know any better and didn't know anything about cars?
I would imagine it has like a snub nose front, like someone saying it looks like a minivan, that like there's not a lot of front overhang because you don't have an engine there and you can get better passenger packaging like the smart cars look, you know what I mean? Like, and then if you make that a little bit larger and puff it up, if it doesn't have like a nose, it doesn't have a hood, then it looks like a minivan or a crossover. Does. You know, I don't know. That's of all the doomsday scenarios, them making some little electric commuter car like a Leaf or like it's just so uninteresting because that is. And I don't know. I mean, we all read that big Johnny Ive interview, right?
I haven't finished it yet.
Oh, it's so good.
No homework. He didn't do his homework.
I did like half of it so far. Give me a break.
Yeah, everyone was raving about that article. But if you have read Leander Caney's Johnny Ive book? A lot of that article read like a book report on the Johnny Ive book, which is not to say it's a bad thing because it's great. Like if you haven't read the book, there's a lot of good information. And of course he had actual interviews and access, and that's the good part of the article. But a lot of it, I felt like I was wading through information that I already knew from the book. That's not a slam on the article. It's just why I found it difficult to get through. But anyway, at one point, Johnny Ive looks out of the window of his Bentley at the Toyota Echo next to him and complains that the styling is terrible. So I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that Apple would be interested in designing a car and that it would be a dorky car. Like this is a dorky car done right. You know what I mean? Like small, you know, commuter car for people who don't need to go long distances, and owning this is so much better for people who never even wanted to own a car. Owning this is so much unlike owning a car that it will be great for you. And you'd be like, oh, they would never do that. Eddie Q is on the board of Ferrari. And, you know, Johnny Ive has Aston Martins and like they like great, cool cars. But Johnny Ive was looking disdainfully at the Echo, not because I think he thinks the Toyota Echo, like the idea of a small economical car is terrible, but just because he thought it wasn't designed right. And in his mind, he's like, I could do a little car that's much better than that.
And he was also picking on somebody who's already down. I mean, Toyota has not made anything attractive since at least the 90s, if not earlier.
Yeah, but as soon as the Supra got all puffy, it was all downhill.
Yeah.
Although some of the early Lexuses weren't that bad. Like, remember the original Lexus SC Coupe? That was interesting design, don't you think?
Really?
The Lexus SC? You talk about the convertible hardtop?
No, the original SC. You guys maybe don't remember. I'll get you.
I'm looking it up. Hold on. That? You like that?
No, like, super old. No, you got to go back in time. Like, what? When did Lexus... When Lexus came out as a company.
They have one that's like, they have a picture here of a 93 and a 92.
Try the SC300, SC400.
It looks kind of like an Integra and a Miata had a baby, and this is like kind of what came out.
I mean, but this is comparatively much tighter, like as in the skin is stretched much tighter over this car than it was. I think this is like the innovative thing about this. It doesn't look like it at the time, looking back, but like, wow, look how smooth and curved the front and back are. Like, this is before cars all became water balloons, but this is, I remember reading a story about this, that one of the design inspirations for the styling of this car was literally taking a water balloon and squeezing it with your hand and seeing the different shapes that it sort of bulges into. But compare this to like current actual water balloon cars, and this looks like sporty and svelte and just...
I'm not sure I agree with you on how good this is.
Yeah, I'm with Marco. This is not a very attractive car at all.
It's a little bit dated, but at the time it came out, it was very refined and stylish, and it was a distinctive... It didn't look like a Mercedes or a BMW, unlike, for example, the LS400, which was like, you know, the poor man's Mercedes, literally only 10 times more reliable and quieter. But it was like this and the original GS, actually had some distinctive styling cues where you could say this is like, and you know, the current line of Lexuses also have distinctive styling cues. They're just all ugly. Our styling is a big, giant, ugly bow tie mouth.
Yeah, them and Acura.
I would really say like this, the last couple years have really not been kind to most car design. We've had some really, really bad cars being made recently.
I really like the new Accord, and I like the new 5 Series. It happened to be two of our cars, but I think the styling of those cars took a definite turn for the better because the previous generation Accord was butt ugly, and the previous generation 5 was not good.
Yeah, I agree with those, actually. But you can look around the industry, and you can see a lot of things that just keep getting worse.
Yeah.
Like, for example, everything Acura makes.
Yep.
Every Acura, every Lexus. Some BMWs, if I can say, I really don't like the new M3 styling, as we talked about with the skin flaps. I don't like that at all.
I don't know. Like Acura, I think, is a little bit of an upswing because they had a really serious, unfortunate beak error, and I think they're trying to come out of that. Like the MDX was like the low point. It's just, or maybe the ZDX, whatever that other thing. Like, I think they're starting to come out of it. I think when they merge their high end sedans back together into whatever it is, the RLX now, the TSX and the RL became the single car, the RLX. That is a rationalization, and the styling of that car is not entirely hideous. And really, the RL wasn't entirely hideous either. But yeah, they're off in a weird direction. I think they're trying to come back. We're like BMW went off in a weird direction too, and they're trying to gather it back. But I think, you know, like you said, the new 3 Series starts to go off in a weird direction again. Like the 5 is... 5 was maybe the peak comeback period, and we'll see what the next 5 looks like to see if it gets better or worse.
God, the Maxima's terrible these days. Sorry.
Yeah, just don't even look at the Maxima anymore. Just don't look.
Oh, my God. I heard it was getting better because it had some dark times, but it just keeps getting worse.
I miss the 40 SC.
Yeah, the one I had, the 96 Maxima, it wasn't incredibly attractive, but it was at least neutral. Ding. This, the new one, oh, boy. Jeez, what are they doing? What is wrong with Nissan? Oh, what a shame. The Maxima was so good. It lost its way so severely.
Yep.
Nissan had some interesting things, like when the Altima did the wraparound taillights, like that was going a little bit too far, but at least it was interesting. And I think the Maxima, like one or two generations ago, also had some interesting features. It was still kind of puffy, but they were kind of in the right direction, and then they just lost it for the current generation.
Oh, man. I miss neutral.
Wow, the Altima's pretty rough these days, too. Boy, what are they thinking?
The car market is not that welcoming as of late. I mean, what is there really that's compelling these days?
Well, I think the move to electric is interesting, you know? Like, it's still pretty limited and expensive, but I think that's like, you know, it's similar to the move to SSDs and computers. Like, that's clearly the way forward eventually. Obviously, it's going to move a lot more slowly, I think, than the SSD transition, but because it turns out gas engines are good enough for so many things and way better at certain other things that, like, yeah, it's going to be a long time before gas engines are even the minority. But I think the electric cars are going to be where we are looking for excitement. And whether, you know, maybe that's why Apple wants to be a part of it if they do, who knows, but you know, clearly from people who have driven them or from people who own them, there are a lot of compelling differences to them. But there's still a lot of downsides, but, you know, we'll get there.
I just looked at the 2015 Maxima. I was thinking of the 2014 one that got the 2015 one. Holy cow.
Did they make it even worse?
I am speechless.
Like, I love this.
I haven't felt this way since the last time when I first saw the rear end of the C7 Corvette. Like, that's the last time I felt this way.
Let me see what happened.
I just put it in the chat room.
What is that?
Oh,
or maybe it's a concept. All right, maybe that's like, maybe it's a concept. I just did search for Nissan Maxima 2015. If this is a concept, I feel a little bit better. But like,
yeah, this is not a shipping car.
But if it was, that would be a big mistake, because that is not an attractive vehicle.
At least it would be different. I mean, this one, like, you could at least describe this one as polarizing, whereas like the regular Maxima you can just describe as mediocre to bad. You know, this polarizing, somebody will love this. You know, people with bad taste probably, but somebody will love this. Whereas the current Maxima, nobody can love it.
That's what I was thinking of the current one, where like that design with the little corner cut out of the headlights. The first time they did that was interesting, but now it's just now the car is puffy and gross again.
It looks like a mistake. it looks like somebody just screwed up while dragging out this design in 3D modeling software.
Everybody, Google for Honda Accord 2014 to cleanse your palate.
Oh God, listen to this guy. Oh wait. The Maxima was at the end of the really sappy Super Bowl commercial from this year. The one where the dad's a race car driver and he like picks his son up from school or something like that at the very
end. Is this the one where they killed children to advertise insurance?
No, I said sappy, not stupid. Anyway, the dad like picks up his kid after he's missed his entire childhood, but he picks him up in a new Maxima, so all's forgiven. I put the link in the chat, about 1 minute and 16 seconds, give or take a little bit.
Wait, this, I'm looking at the 2014 Honda Accord to cleanse my palate, and you're right, it did cleanse my palate because it just looks completely forgettable. Like,
Don't look at the hybrid!
I'm not, I'm looking at the LX sedan on automotive.com. It's just incredibly bland. It's even in that light silver color that all incredibly bland cars in the last decade have been.
It is not bland, it is distinctive, it is non-bloaty, it is attractive, it has nice wheels.
I agree that it's non-bloaty.
Like the sheet metal is stuck to the car.
Yes, I will agree. I will give you that point.
And it is a car-shaped car.
Yes.
Wow.
It's not shaped like a snail or a poop.
Our standards are pretty low here. This is winning.
Well, you look at that friggin' Maxima. What is that shaped like? Not a car.
I guess that is the epitome of water balloon design.
I actually do not think the Accord is very good looking, to be honest with you.
You know, it really needs that spoiler lip on the back to keep the wheels on the ground. It's really fast.
It does. You get a little extra downforce for that. I think it is very attractive. The rear end is not great, but it's better than past Accords. But I really like the front of it. And even, like, it's like, oh, isn't there just a little bit too much chrome on the front? Like, just look at all the other Hondas that are trying to use the same design language and how gross they are. And this is the one car that got this design language to be attractive, I think.
This looks no different to me than, what's the big Toyota?
The Camry.
This is so different. Go actually look at a Camry now. You'll Google Camry. You will see there's a huge difference. Never mind if you see them in person. It's not even close. Like rectilinear headlights.
All right, so I'm looking at a Camry now, and
it looks the exact same.
No, it does not. Are you crazy?
I would say the Accord looks better.
Way better.
I would say the difference is pretty small.
Thank you. I would agree with that, Marco.
No way. Look at the giant fish mouth and the friggin'... Oh, I'm looking at the Avalon. But like the Camry, like it's just the Camry has nothing going for it. It has no distinction to its design. It is just a series of little details tacked on to a squishy shape.
Well, I would say the same thing is true of the Accord. It just looks a little bit less squishy. No. Like there's not a lot going on here. Like it is a very like... Like if you think about like what would be the dictionary definition of a car, it would have a picture of this next to it. If you like, you ever see those pictures where they average every human face and then it shows like the most average face?
No, this would not be the average. This is different. Average together, like the Camry and the Maxima, and like you do not get the Accord. It is not the average. It may have been the average of a bunch of cars from like a decade ago, but it is off the beaten path of car makers now. I think this car is attractive and classy, I would say. Classy. It does not embarrass itself in the way that the other cars do.
Because it just disappears. It just blends right into whatever.
I don't think it just disappears. I think being classy in this way doesn't disappear in the same way that like that Casey's beloved 5 Series, like, whoa, this is boring. It just kind of blends in with the background. It just looks like a car. The only thing that distinguishes it is it's got little kidneys in the front, but otherwise it's just a car-shaped car. Remember when all the BMWs were all like the same shape, just came in different sizes?
Not that different from now, honestly.
Well, it is now because they all have these bulges and ripples and flanges all over them, and they all have different ripples and flanges. But when they all look the same, the complaint was it's too boring. It doesn't have the excitement of, you know, if I'm going to spend this much money on a car, I want it to look more exciting. I just don't want it to look like the same car in 3 sizes and super boring. But I think that's a you know, having restraint and being sort of a classy car that the places where it decides to emphasize its attractiveness is in the small details, but the overall shape is very just simple and non-showy. I think it's a perfectly valid way to go. I think they screwed it up with the back because the taillights aren't particularly nice looking, but the overall shape of the car, I think, is very pleasing.
See, your definition of classy, to me, what you're describing is the E39 M5. When I think of boring and unremarkable, I think of pretty much any Accord that's ever been, ever.
Another good example is the front air dam, like the big plastic front bumper thing, whatever you're going to call that. So many car makers, including I think most BMWs these days, just go nuts with that thing and mess it up.
Oh, well, the thing with BMWs, you're right, is that, and I've talked about this a million times, the non-M Sport front air dam on a regular BMW is like a little slit, and it looks awful. It looks terrible. Most of the reason I insisted on getting myself an M Sport 335 was not because of anything else. Like, it doesn't really go any faster, doesn't handle any better because I have an X Drive. It was strictly for that air dam because it actually looks good.
But I think most of the things try to make everything look like it has giant jet intakes and big scoops and flanges and things poking out of it. And that's why I think that the M Sport ones look worse than the other ones, or like at least more gaudy. And just look at the big front piece of plastic on this Accord. It is restrained. It does not call attention to itself. It completes the shape of the car with maybe a little bit of smarty pretensions of like sticking out at the bottom rim a little bit and with a little tiny chrome accent, but it does not. I mean, then just compare it to that same part on an M3, a current generation M3, which just like screams at you that I'm a transformer.
Well, but you're making our point, which is like, the Accord looks like it looks average and forgettable. It is like, it doesn't jump out at you. None of the design just jumps out and says, look at me, I'm a huge design flaw. It just, the whole car just looks like an average, completely forgettable car.
Well, average car doesn't have those wheels, and I would say an average car doesn't have the LED LED highlights in the headlights, and the you know, looking restrained, I think does make it stand. Again, compare it to the Avalon, which looks like a giant cheese grater fish grill flying through the air with a chrome nose on it. Like, that is what the average car looks like. Go look at, you know, like it's not this is the average car. Like, The Altima is the average car. The Maxima is the average car. The Camry is the average car. They do not look like... Compare the thing I just pasted in the chat room with the Accord and say, like, well, you know, it calls attention to itself, but in a bad way. And if you averaged a bunch of cars together, I think you would get something that looked way more like the Avalon than like the Accord.
Oh, my God. The Avalon is ridiculous. What is that?
That's the current... That's like... And oh, again, look at the Camry with the little chrome... Like,
this is uglier than that Maxima concept.
Exactly. Like, that's what the average car looks like now. And look at the front, no, you know, doesn't. Bumper thing. Well, go look at the Camry.
See, yeah, you're right. That front air dam is the kind of front air dam that I like, the big gaping hole, taken way too far, entirely too far.
And on top of it is an ugly chrome nose, and it's got misshapen headlights hanging off the corners, and the fog lights are all misshapen.
Oh, we agree about this.
What is this? I'm just blown away by this car, by the Avalon. Oh my God. Like, I rented an Avalon like a couple of years ago on a trip. And it was a pretty reasonable car. Like, it was huge and totally marshmallowy. Like, you couldn't feel or do anything. But it was overall a respectable choice. Like, it looked average. It was black. It was, you know, low key. It was pretty fast given what it was. And it was comfortable. Like, it was fine. It was a perfectly fine choice. This, my God. I mean,
go look at the Camry I just pasted in.
Ooh. That is
go
really
look
bad.
At the front piece of plastic on this Camry and look at the shape of the headlights. Ooh. And look at how the shape of the headlights just have no conviction. Like, and keep the Accord open in other windows. You can keep looking back from one to the other. Look at the friggin' front of that Camry. Oh, Camry and Accord, they basically look the same. Are you kidding me? Look at that thing.
I didn't say they basically look the same.
I did.
Well, now that you see them both in front of you, do you understand how the Accord is very different? And if you average all these cars together, they would not look like that. And again, throw in the Altima, throw in, you know...
This Camry looks like it's been an accident. Doesn't it? Like the way it has like those like half fog lights like on the side, and then the whole front grill is like weirdly shaped and black. It looks like it was in an accident and it's been half repaired, and they haven't like painted the new parts yet.
I mean, look at the hood. Look at the hood cut lines. Even look at the shape of the headlights. Look at the hood cut lines. Look at the lack of confidence in the chrome, like it's going across the thing through the logo. It's nothing. And, you know, like, I think the only other car company, boring car company, that has cars that have a styling that is not embarrassing and hideous is Mazda. And the Mazda 6, again, does not look like other cars, is interesting. It has a family resemblance and it has some interesting styling elements, but it has sort of the courage of its convictions.
It says conviction right in the marketing title. Conviction, creativity, courage. Wow. This is what changes the game. It's the first word on the page.
Yeah, see, so Aaron has a 2007 Mazda 6, which I think is a very pretty car for the time. It has...
Less conviction there.
It has the kind of large front air dam that I like. Then the generation after hers, which started in like 2008, 2009, It was one or two generations, actually, that were just terrible. But I agree with you that the brand new Mazda 6, maybe it's a year or two old now, is also very pretty, and I also really, really like it.
Yeah, and I don't like the styling as much as the Accord, but you can't say that it looks like... I think they made it worse. The one I just pasted actually looks worse than the original generations. But, like, it has kind of shoulders and hips, and its headlights have a purposeful, distinct shape. Same thing with its hood cut lines. Everything about it is not... Like, I hate cars where it looks like they molded the car out of clay and then someone else came later and cut out where the hood would be. Like, even the current BMW 3s with, like, the hood corners that end kind of over on the right and left edges by the headlights, like, it looks like you made a car shape and it was a good car shape, but where you cut out for the hood makes your car less attractive. Like, it's not integrated into the shape. It's just like you took a line, a laser, and went, okay, now that's where the hood opens. Speaking of hoods, did you watch that i8 video that someone sent us?
No, I watched 2 seconds of it. I didn't have a chance.
You should, because, well, first of all, I'll make Marco never buy this car, which may be good because we think he shouldn't buy this car. So we'll stop him from buying the car.
Well, so far, I think I shouldn't buy this car. So you don't need to do any convincing there.
All right. But you watch. I wish we still have that. I think someone emailed it to us.
No, I mean, like, I've never been interested in the i8 because it is not a four-door sedan. Ultimately, I really just want a four-door sedan. And I'm very happy with the one I have.
You know, some of the chat room said the BMW i8 screams Tesla anxiety. Tesla is, with the exception of perhaps of the stupid door handles, is a actual real regular car. Like, you use it every day. Nothing about it is weird. You can open and close all the doors simply because the i8 has those weird doors as well. You can open and close all the different trunk hatches. You can get in and get out of it. It has seats. It has, you know, like, everything about it is just, it's a car. You can drive it. Whereas the i8 is like, it's kind of a work of art, kind of a statement about something. It also kind of works as a car if you're careful.
All right, so let's take on the big guns now. I don't think the Tesla Model S is that attractive.
It's not. The front of the Tesla Model S is ugly, like the grill thing, speaking of mouths. But the overall shape is pretty decent.
I would say that the Model S looks like it looks extremely blobby. It looks like all the personality's been sanded off. I don't like the light design. I don't like the front or the back design or the side design. And I've seen a number of them in person, and I don't think they use very high quality paint. I've never seen, like, the black doesn't look very good. The silver just kind of looks boring. You can look at certain cars. Like, I always get blacks. You can look at certain cars and you can see, like, certain blacks are better looking than others. And Tesla, I think, has a pretty crappy one. And like it doesn't look like its price at all. And for a car that is so interesting and revolutionary, I think it should look a little more like that. And it doesn't.
That's Tesla's weak spot. The interior are the same as well. The materials of the interior, the comfort, although supposedly in the new models, there's an option for much better seats. But, like, the interior of the car does not look like a car of that price. The materials, the comfort, the thickness of the padding on the seats, like, it just, and like I said, the outside of it, the paint quality, the detailing, it seems like a lower class than it should be. I think the overall shape is actually pretty good and actually kind of interesting and muscular, but it, like, the front and rear end treatments do not do justice to the overall shape, which I think the overall shape is not bad. Like, if you blanked over all the headlights and taillights and got rid of that ugly mouth grill on the front and just look like the shape of the car, it looks, in that regard, I think it does look like an expensive car in the shape, because most cars, but again, maybe the exception of, like, the Mazda 6, don't look sort of that muscular and purposeful, especially a car with as much interior room as the Model S has. Like, it doesn't look like a big giant crossover SUV thing that's lowered down. But I mean, consider what came before. The Tesla Roadster was just flat out ugly. Like, it was not an attractive looking car at all. It was just, the shape of it was awkward and weird and everything about it.
I don't think that's true. I thought it was a decent looking car. I mean, granted, it was basically just a Lotus, but I didn't think it was a bad looking car.
The Lotus looks way better on that same frame than the thing. But the Model S has something to recommend it, and it sort of defines a Tesla look. I don't particularly think the Tesla look is that attractive, but I do like the overall shape of the car, and I do think the shape looks a little bit expensive. But yeah, the detailing.
You can get a yacht floor.
What, in the Model S?
Yeah, there's an option for a yacht floor.
Yeah, I think they are cranking up the options. Like, what was it?
What is a yacht floor?
Dave Danian of Super Duper fame was telling me about the new model of Teslas because he got to drive one. You know, like, the dealership gave him one when his was in for service, so he got to drive one of the new fast ones and everything, and he's telling about the new options. I think, like, they realize where their weaknesses are. Like, if people spend that much money on the car, they want the interior to feel better than a $30,000, you know, $35,000 BMW with cloth seats. They don't even make those anymore, but they used to, right?
Right. Well, no, they still do in Europe, just not in the US.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, and then the problem Tesla's always had is, like, they've always compared themselves in justifying their high price. They've always said, well, if you compare us to, like, a Mercedes S-Class, which is what we're comparable to, blah, blah, blah.
It's not even a contest there.
Right. Like, if you compare the interior quality to other, like, to a 7 Series, an S-Class.
Or the amenities.
Or the amenities. You know, the Lexus, the high-end Lexuses. Like, if you compare it to any of the very high-end large sedans, it doesn't quite match up. At least it hasn't in the past. Maybe, you know, I haven't seen one of these new ones yet, but
the Tesla will take that S-Class off the line any day, though. And so, like, so you can kind of start selling it as, like, in the same way that you don't expect, like, you know, an Audi RS or a Porsche GT3. You know the interior is going to be, like, stripped down and bare, and, like, that's part of the aesthetic of the car. Like, you're not in, so, like, in some ways Tesla kind of unintentionally has that going for it. It's like, we don't intentionally make it stripped down, although I always thought in the first model, like, the interior was, like, the padding was so thin on the seats and everything, just because they wanted to save weight, and, like, those big luxurious cushy seats like you have in your car, Marco, they weigh a lot, and so if you're trying to cut down on weight, you're going to give it a little bit cheaper seats. And that's why I think, like, the new seats are an option, and I wonder how much more they weigh than the other stuff. But if you know, if you're going to go with that thing, at least you have performance to back it up. I mean, it still weighs a ton and still not going to change direction that well, but, like, it does have that super flat cornering attitude that feels weird. And, you know, it's super fast and quiet and, you know, actually a fun electric car to drive by all accounts.
I got to drive one. I'm tired of guessing how much fun it is.
I think you will find it to be super heavy and corner strangely flat and be really fast in a straight line.
That's very likely, yeah. And I'm going to hate the lack of knobs and buttons.
I have not driven one, but I have been driven in one. And even just being a passenger, I was just immediately apparent. Like, it's not like I went in expecting to feel this because I didn't really know, didn't think about it or whatever. How flat it is in cornering. Like, strangely so. Startling. Without having, you know, stiff suspension where you feel every bump because it's just the center of gravity. Like, this humongous weight is on the bottom of the car. And then, did I feel that the car felt heavy? I can't tell that as a passenger, but I just know it is heavy because it is, you know.
Wonder how many people are actually going to listen to this.
I got to cut all this neutral out because people can't take it.
The whole show was neutral. This is mostly staying in, I think.
Yeah. Well, the Apple car, it's not our fault. They forced our hand.
Yeah, we had to do this. It was an accidental car podcast.